Yes, it's that time of the week where we talk all things travel, and I'm joined by Sally Lucas. Hello.
Hi, Amanda. How's things?
Good. Nice to have you. Now, today we're talking about Hong Kong.
And this came up in discussion at lunch with some friends. We were talking about where you would take your family to or where you have taken your family to for a special birthday occasion, whatever. And I was mentioning how I'm doing Lord Howe next year. And they said, oh, we really loved Hong Kong. We took the kids and the grandkids and there was so much to see and do there. And I thought, wow, I haven't talked about Hong Kong for such a long time. And it was always one of my favourite destinations. And I've been there about seven times in my history as a travel agent. So I thought, let's revisit Hong Kong.
Oh, that sounds good. Well, I've never been to Hong Kong, so I'm looking forward to hearing all about it.
Not another one on your bucket list.
I know. Oh, look,
how
I'm not going to.
Bills cap pages.
I know. I need to get a third job, actually, just to pay for the holidays. To a new RFM. Good times and great music. This is Talking Travel, and we're going to Hong Kong.
We certainly are. And as I said to you earlier, how it came about, but also we were just discussing, Mel and I, thinking about when the handover happened from the UK. And would you believe that's 30 years ago next year?
Really?
Can I believe it was that long ago? Midnight on the 1st of July 1997 was the end of 156 years of British rule. So
Time flies.
The other reason I think it's nice to talk about Hong Kong, it's only 9.5 hours flying time. And it's only 2 hours behind us, so you're not going to get the jet lag. It's easy to get to. And it comprises, which a lot of people may not know, of 263 surrounding islands. So it's a real archipelago. It's not just Kowloon, and everyone says Hong Kong Island, Kowloon, and that's all they think about. There's a lot more to Hong Kong than that. And a lot of uninhabited islands where they run treks, hikes, all sorts of things, nature walks. So there's a lot more to Hong Kong than just those two places that you hear about the most. About 40 are inhabited. The rest, as I just said, are uninhabited. The largest island is Lantau Island, and it's known for its attractions like the Tian Tan Buddha and the Nong Ping 360 cable car, which is this incredibly long cable car, which is amazing. Hong Kong Island then would come next, and then you've got Lama Island, Chung Chow, which is famous for its annual bun festival, and you've got to book for that, like the ferry queue. We were over there one time when the bun festival was on, and we hadn't realised it was on because I like Chung Chow because it's a walking island, and the only vehicles that are on there are little purpose-built, small, mainly for tradies, so they can still do building and so on because all the streets are so narrow. Right. So it's basically a walking island.
What's a bun festival? Just like bread?
Well, I'll explain that
okay. In
a moment. I'm coming to that. I'll come back to that.
Right.
But the islands are spread across Hong Kong's waters. Now, some are integrated into urban areas. And as I said, others offer just really tranquil escapes from the city. And they call the islands the outlying islands and the islands district. They've got two groups with two different names. And they are just, some of them are actually quite beautiful, which you don't think about with Hong Kong. As I mentioned, hiking, beachcombing, bird watching, and most of these islands are accessible by ferry or private boat, of course. But some of your top attractions in Hong Kong, of course, Victoria Peak is a must, where you go up and you be there at sunset. So you watch the sunset down over Hong Kong and over the harbour, which is quite beautiful. To have the lights all come on, it's wonderful. The old Star Ferry, like we get rid of ferries, but Hong Kong keeps their Star Ferry. And to me, I'd go on that every day rather than on the MTR under the tunnel where you're not seeing anything. Mm. You see what's happening on the harbour. It's really interesting. And that's, to me, is one thing you've got to do. It's a great scenic walk with views of the skyline along the Tsim Sha Tsui Promenade. You've got Hong Kong Disneyland also on Lantau Island. You've got Ocean Park, which is at Aberdeen on Hong Kong Island as well, which is a marine mammal park, amusement park. It's a combination of everything. And then back on the other side, on the Kowloon side, one of the few markets that's still remaining, I think it's the last remaining night market actually, is the Temple Street Night Market. And that's a really interesting place to go to. It was once a popular entertainment area known as Poor Man's Nightclub because everything would happen there. There'd be ad lib performances, all the street food, shopping was cheap, and everything just came alive after 8 p.m. And so you can still go there and you might see a Chinese opera show. There'll be fortune tellers. It's just really quite fun and quite interesting. And it's at Jordan, which is just north of Kowloon. You could walk there, but you could also use the MTR or get a bus as well. So that's something that you can always do as well. And all the hawker bazaars and, you know, all those lovely things you do when you go to Asia. Now, Lantau, again, getting back to Lantau, is really interesting. Apart from the Buddha, which is the largest seated outdoor bronze Buddha in the world, it's right up on a hilltop I didn't walk it last time. My back didn't like it. I can't remember. Scott counted the steps. I didn't. But it's a huge amount of steps to get to the hilltop where the Buddha is. And then you've got these incredible views. As I said, the cable car, which gives you breathtaking views as well, of the big Buddha as well. They've got the Polin Monastery as well, which is great. There's a hiking trail, a wisdom path that traces wooden steels, they call them, but they're little posts that contain verses from the Heart Sutra, which is a significant religious text. You've got a beach, which has got a beautiful swimming beach as well. And it's got the longest sea-crossed bridge in the world that goes between there and Macau. So Macau is Portuguese. It's the colony there, which you can do as a day visit as well. So, look, there's just so much to do on Hong Kong.
It sounds like it, and you've still got more to tell us.
Yeah.
Yeah, wonderful.
We haven't got
to the bun
festival.
And I still want to find out what this bun festival is all about. You're making me hungry. This is 2NURFM 103.7. This is Talking Travel with Sally Lucas. And, Sally, we're going to continue with Hong Kong.
We are. I'm still on Hong Kong Island at the moment. Ladder Street. You might not have heard of this, or you might have. It's a pedestrian pathway and historic site between Queen's Road Central and Cane Road on Hong Kong Island. Now, this was constructed between 1841 and 1850. It's basically a granite stone stairway that climbs around 350 metres, because Hong Kong Island is very steep, just so you know. Mm-hmm. Victoria Peak, etc. You have the little funicular that goes up there. Of course, you don't walk all the way up to Victoria Peak. But I guess in the old days, people did, and this is why Ladder Street was built. And it was much needed, of course, to get to the mid-levels where people were living. There is a partial moving footway now that takes you about halfway. And once you get to each level, if you like, there's a cross street. So you walk up a set of stairs, then there's a cross street, then again. And each of these cross streets has got a different range of restaurants.
Oh,
which is really interesting as well. So Ladder Street is very interesting. Now, the other area is Wan Chai, which is in the central part of the north coast of Hong Kong Island. And again, that's a really old part of Hong Kong. These days, though, of course, there's so much high-rise now. People in the old days used to even live on... When I first started going, they were still living in sampans and junks on the harbour, but that's not the case anymore. But that whole area is a really interesting area to visit as well. Got the oldest post office there, which is now declared as a monument, and all sorts of interesting things to visit in that area. But I want to get to the Chung Chow Bun Festival
for you. Yes, please do.
So it draws tens of thousands of local and overseas tourists every year, and it's staged to mark the eighth day of the fourth month in the Chinese calendar, which is usually in early May, and it coincides with the local celebration of Buddha's birthday. Mm-hmm. So it began as a fun and exciting ritual for fishing communities to pray for safety from pirates. But today, its religious origin has largely been forgotten, as often happens, and it has mainly become a showcase of now traditional Chinese culture. Now, this person, Kwok Kam Kee, has been the official, or the company, official bun supplier for the festival, which was opened 40 years ago, and they make over 60,000 buns for the festival. Oh. So in tradition, they have lion dancers, dragon dancers, children dressed as legendary and modern heroes, and they form a parade in the air with these different things that they hold up with idols and things on them, steel frames and all sorts of things. And, yeah, so what it was originally, they had this wooden tower and they'd be throwing, they were like spiky bits on the towers. You'd be throwing the buns up and the men mainly would be scaling to see how many buns they could get off.
Oh, they could, what, they could catch?
Off this structure.
Oh, okay.
So you were throwing them up. Hopefully they were sticking onto the structure because they had little pointy ends on the wood. And then, yes, but they became so dangerous that they just don't do that anymore.
Yeah, I wonder why, yeah.
So that was more in the olden days. But anyhow, and don't forget the Lunar New Year, of course, is a traditional Chinese festival. And that is very important, of course, in there. And that varies, again, depending on, as we know, the moon and all that sort of thing. But it's normally around in the first part of the first few months of the year. But also that's another thing they celebrate really well over there. But it's also a food paradise. They have got so many Michelin-starred restaurants in Hong Kong. It's unbelievable. And I've been lucky enough to be into a couple of them. But also they've got wonderful, as we've talked about, hawker markets. They've got wonderful local restaurants. We went to a Shea Swan restaurant, which if you know, the Shea Swan form of cooking is lots and lots of chilies.
And if you like spicy food.
I do, but I bet I couldn't do this one. Our plate was covered in chilies. I mean, covered. The dish, there was a dish underneath it with God knows what now, probably beef or something and noodles, but it was literally covered in chilies.
I hope you had a big glass of milk.
I didn't eat all the chilies, no. But look, Hong Kong is wonderful. As I said, ferries, you can get you around. You've got the MTR, which runs super efficiently. You know, you can buy a, oh no, what's the card called? It's gone out of my head. Mel, you might remember. Is it the Octopus card? The Octopus card, which you can buy, and you can use that to pay for your buses, to, you know, get around, so you're not worrying about money all the time. And you can even buy things at the little convenience stores, and you can buy them there as well, the Octopus card. So that's a good thing to use when you're there. Obviously, since the changeover with China, we found the last time we were there, there wasn't as much English spoken as there had been previously, because a lot of the Chinese people then moved into Hong Kong, which was originally as a British colony. So just make sure if you're going out that you get a card with your hotel name on it in English and Chinese. So if you happen to get a taxi driver, you know, they'll know where to take you, and you won't feel that you're getting ripped off or anything like that. So just a tip. But yeah, but it's really easy. It's a good place to get around, and lots of fun things for kids and adults.
Oh, lovely. Well, who knew there was so much to do in Hong Kong? Thank you very much, Sally. 2NURFM, this is Talking Travel. If you'd like to go on holiday shortly, Sal's got some hot deals for you.
Now, this is a huge one. We've all heard about Around the World in 80 Days, but this is Around the World in 180 Days.
Oh, big trip.
January 2028. Oceania Voyage, it's designed for travellers who value cultural connection, meaningful experiences, but they do have more time in port with a lot of overnight stays. So it's amazing. You're visiting 6 continents, 88 ports, and 90 UNESCO sites. So it actually starts in the Americas, goes all the way through the Pacific, all the way up through Asia, back down through India. Oh, it's amazing. As I said, all those places, and they're giving you a shore excursion credit of $9,000 as a little encouragement to maybe make a deposit and book on it. But for someone who, I guess it's going to mainly appeal to retired people who've got the time and obviously the money to be able to do this. But look, what an experience would that be? You're going to see so much in that amount of time. I just thought, amazing. Anyway.
Sounds lovely.
Oh, now, this is something really different as well. Pearl Expeditions has that beautiful luxury yacht style vessel that has a limited amount of people on board. I can't think of the exact number off the top of my head, but they're doing a circumnavigation of New Britain, which again is an area that not many people know about. It's more than 600 islands, more than 800 languages spoken there. This is in Papua New Guinea. So it's just, this is becoming a real destination now, these cruises going around that sort of archipelago again, because you can't get to them by any other means. Like, there's no infrastructure, there's no airports. So by doing it by a cruise is a beautiful way of doing it. And also you're going to what they call the Bismarck Archipelago, which is the largest island of New Britain, is there. And then you've got, they say, volcanic craters ringed by walls 150 metres high. I mean, it just sounds amazing. Mm. The Amazon of the Seas, it's called, because of the absolute proliferation of the most beautiful coral and sea life. So that's coming up. If you're interested, they've got a departure 7th of November and the 17th of November this year. It's 11 nights doing that circumnavigation of New Britain on Pearl. And as I said, they've only got I wish I could remember how many passengers, but it's a very small amount. I think there's only about 18 cabins, something like that. So, yeah. Viking there got a new sailing open for new 2028. It's called European Sojourn. Now, this is a 23-day river cruise, which is something a bit different, just the usual 15-day that goes from Amsterdam as far as Budapest. So this one's continuing on, actually, and going down through Belgrade into Serbia, Bulgaria, etc., and it finishes up in Bucharest in Romania. So I think that would be a very interesting combination of doing that part of Europe as well. So you've got early bookings there available now that you can currently take advantage of. Also, Portugal, that's again, I thought was a delightful country, another delightful country. If you book by Friday the 7th of August, the Bunnik Portugal tour, for next year, there's savings up to $1,500 per couple. And they're also giving a discount for solo persons as well on that. So that's always good to know. Hurtigruten, they've got an itinerary going their land and their sea voyage. So this is a combination of doing the Winter Northern Lights adventure from Norway to Finland. So you start off in Oslo and you go through into Alesund, Stavanger, Alesund, Rovik, Svolvær, and then you finish in Tromsø. And from Tromsø, you join a land voyage that takes you through into Finland, etc., and you're finishing up in Helsinki. They've got departures in 2027, two in October, two in November, and one in December. Really great package, sea and land. It's to take advantage of if you're really interested in the Scandinavian or that Norwegian, Finland area.
Northern Lights.
In Northern Lights, absolutely magic. So many magic places in the world, though, Amanda.
There are. Too many to go to.
We'll never cover them all.
Someone just give me $1 million. Oh, actually, I need more than a million these days.
Yeah, a couple.
Okay, maybe I need to rub shoulders with Elon Musk or something. Or maybe not. All right. Well, thank you very much,
Thanks, Sally.
Amanda. We'll catch you next week for Talking Travel
you
on
will.
2NURFM.